Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. How you doing?
Season two. We're just rolling right along. We're on episode three, The New Kids on the Block. Today.
Yes, today.
We would like to welcome back to the podcast in person.
Woo woo.
Our Stephanie Savage.
Hi, guys.
Hi. We're so happy that you joined us today.
So happy to be here and so happy to see you in person. Really so happy to see anybody in person, but right. Especially you guys.
Especially, aww. And we're kind of with our new set. And
yeah,
it looks just kind of similar to the Cohen backyard.
It looks great. I feel super relaxed.
Right.
I know.
Thank you so much.
If only we're on the lounge chairs and they aren't in the pool. So that's a good thing. So, you know, we're moving right along in this second season. I'm really into this season. There's a lot happening.
Mm-hmm.
Not
there
that
is.
There wasn't in the first, but it's just really fun. We're introducing a lot of new characters,
mm-hmm.
And storylines. And I just think it's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a great season for both of us, especially. I just remember getting very juicy storylines and there's so much coming up. But before we get into that, I just had a few questions, some of the same questions that we actually asked Josh, that there was so much storyline burned through
mm-hmm.
after 27 episodes
mm-hmm.
in season one. And do you remember the overall physical and mental feeling of you guys in the writer's room and how you spent your hiatus?
I think it was like fumes and exhaustion.
Right.
And I don't remember much of a hiatus. In fact, I rewatched the first four episodes of season two. And it's hilarious to me. I think we came back so quickly, like because we had done 27 episodes that ate into our hiatus, that like the renovation on the Cohen set was not finished. So we had to write into the show that there's like four episodes where there's some plastic sheets hanging down because our construction team finished their work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But was that a decision?
Our like construction team wore shirts and like didn't work while we were shooting, but like they hadn't finished. The bait shop wasn't built. So that didn't premiere until episode three. We had two
right.
episodes with no bait shop. And like we were all just sort of rushing back into that.
So, okay, then we can ask those questions
yeah.
that I seem to remember that you guys just didn't like the set of the Cohen house or you just wanted to expand it or what was the reason?
Yeah, we had a dining room that was really hard to shoot in. It didn't have any wild walls which means when you're on a set, a lot of times the walls can move and that's how you get the camera in.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, that dining room didn't have wild walls. So it was really, really hard to shoot. And we never went in there. Like, I doubt if people remember it. It had like yellow floral wallpaper and like kind of a fancy table.
I don't think we ever shot in there.
Yeah, like maybe one time. And then we were like, not doing that again. And all of our meals were either at the Cohen house were either in the kitchen on that big wooden table or outside on the patio.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real problem.
Yeah. So we're like, we have this big space that we're not using. And if we just blew that wall out and we could put like the TV watching area in there and sort of make it like a U-shaped family room. I mean, it's similar to like what a family today would be like. We don't use our formal dining room.
Right.
So let's, you know, make it into a great room with the TV and everyone can like hang out and like, you know, we're cooking and we're eating
right.
and we're watching
the whole
stuff.
Open concept.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then the naked construction
yeah,
workers.
So, yeah.
yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I have a feeling that might have been an Alan Heinberg suggestion, but we thought it was pretty funny. And
it
also
funny.
The guy who's spending so much time in the house that he ends up driving Ryan and
Archie.
Seth to school.
Yes.
Archie.
Yeah.
Yep. He gives them a lift to school.
Well, I guess, you know, if one has gone through you know, a reconstruction of their home, you tend to probably get into the lives of the of the construction workers. But I think it was kind of symbolic of it's a hot summer.
Yeah.
They're sweaty, even though they're probably illegal the way they're dressed. but it also made for a lot of good jokes.
Yes.
Right.
It sure did.
Indeed.
Right, right. Well, Thursday, we changed time slots from, we moved from Wednesday to Thursdays at 8. How did you feel about that? Do you remember?
Scared. Well, to go back to the end of season one, we went, I remember Josh and I being at the upfronts for season two. And when the show went to the upfronts the first time, it was exciting, but it hadn't aired yet. So it was all like speculative and like, oh, we hope people like it, but no one knew. We went season two and they always do like a big, they have like a musical act at the beginning of the, to open the show. And this is for ad sales buyers. So it's got a real salesy kind of flavor to it. And we're sitting in the audience and then this big voice comes on and goes like, last summer, a revolution in television happened. And we look at each other and we're like, oh my God, what's the revolution? And then Phantom Planet comes out and they're singing California.
What?
And that's how they opened the upfronts. And we were just like, holy smokes. Like the fact that Fox had done summer programming and that had worked was apparently a revolution.
Wow.
And that the like they had brought Phantom Planet to like do the song and like the show really became kind of the jewel in the crown for them versus like a fun outlier that like people responded to in a way that was surprising. And the fact that it was a true like, I don't know if it was in the top 10, but for sure it was like a top 20 show. Like in a old fashioned world of broadcasting where the top shows were like NFL football and, you know, CSI Miami and American Idol type of shows that like just to have like a scripted show that was doing a scripted 1 hour that was doing so well was like a big deal. And it felt in that moment like maybe a bigger deal than we had really understood. Mm-hmm. Like we were just understanding in a way of like enjoying ourselves and like having fun and like seeing the understanding that the show is reacting to fans, but not really getting that like, oh, on like a corporate, like Fox level, it was becoming important. And so when they moved us, it was just kind of like, are you sure this is a good idea? Because we had originally launched after American Idol, which was a great time to come on. And kind of been counter-programming to some of the other things that were on TV. So the idea that we were getting what they were calling like the friend spot was kind of scary.
It's a real vote of confidence to put us up against must-see TV.
Yeah.
But of course, it cuts into our audience numbers.
I think
we overall, we reduced almost like 30%. But it was still a better success for Fox than they'd ever had
in that spot. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing when you get moved. And then we got moved another time to like 9 o'clock or something. Or we got moved to Wednesday again and then back or something. When you do that to a show, it gets a little weaker each time it feels like, right?
Yeah. And what's so crazy now is like people are like, wait, shows came on at a certain time.
Right, I know, because everything's just at your disposal and you stream it and it's totally different.
Those were big numbers compared to today, Josh.
Oh my goodness, huge numbers, huge.
8 million average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, going back into writing this second season, and you know, you were saying like you did so many the first season and blew through so many storylines. How did you guys come up with like the next steps? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how did you kind of?
Well, it was very funny because funny slash hard that the season finale of season one is one of my favorite episodes of television, whether I had anything to do with it or not. I just think it's so good. But what it kind of like deconstructs the entire show. You know, it really pulls it apart in a way than it, and also again, 27 episodes now would be like 3 seasons of a streaming show.
Wow. Yeah.
So to go say like, all right, well, we did that in one season. Now what are we going to do? And we had to kind of rebuild the show in season two. get Seth and Ryan back to the OC, because obviously we're not going to do a show where half of it takes place in Portland with Luke's dad. And, like, the family doesn't live together and Ryan's in Chino. And so getting them back in a way that felt satisfying to the audience, and, like, even if the audience is going, obviously they're going to come back, that you're still telling an emotional story that has resonance and is reinforcing the relationships and the dynamics and kind of reminding everybody, like, what the core of the show is, what the heart is, which is definitely, you know, that brother's story, mm-hmm. and Sandy and Kirsten and the boys. And so really kind of pulling on those threads and then and having everybody come back together. And then we had also kind of, and I think Josh talked a little bit about this in his first podcast, but kind of depopulated the show as it went along. You know, Anna came and went, Luke came and went, and we hadn't had, like, some new young characters for you guys to, you know, have stories with. And then we also were very hesitant to pair you guys with each other, which I think that's, like, a really... That's like a what if, like, parallel universe of, like, what if Summer and Ryan got together? What if there's a moment at the end of episode 3 when Seth and Marissa are sitting on a bench, the two loneliest people in Newport, and we were watching that in editing. We were like, I literally wrote that.
I said, did you guys ever throw that? Pairing around.
And then we were just like, we can't.
Yeah.
It's too sacred.
Yeah. Right.
So then you had really nobody except each other to have go back and forth, which I think Adam, when he came on, alluded to that feeling of, like, a desire to do longer arcs and not have it feel like a sitcom where, like, every episode something broke up Seth and Summer, but then by the end of the episode they were back together, which that's what we were attempting to do at the beginning of season 2 by bringing in Zach to complicate your relationship and Lindsay to complicate Marissa and Ryan, and then Alex for Seth and
for everyone.
Yeah, for everyone, really.
Right. Even and, Julie has a crush on her.
She's absolutely.
Like, I love your pants.
I love your pants. Yeah, that's in the Moth episode. That's honestly
that's one of my favorite lines. No, it's so true. It's so true. But
it's funny to hear you know, having those moments of, like, Seth, Marissa, like, Ryan, Summer. I feel like Josh has said if we could go back and watch, like, Ryan and Summer. Like, he said that.
Yeah.
And he was probably just messing with me. But,
well, I mean, I it was probably the right decision at the time. But it was really something. I don't know how the audience would have felt about that. And then in future shows, like on Gossip Girl, we did do that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always successful. Like, people didn't like to see some of those pairings.
Right.
And they were like, why are you doing this?
It's like the Joey and Rachel and Friends. You're like, you just don't go there sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just not right. Yeah.
That leads to a question that I actually had. And it's, you know, because you bring in all these characters and these love interests, and then some characters are more embraced than others or just work better for whatever reason. And then I'm curious, if you're writing for a character and a storyline and it's not going and you have to pivot, what is that process like? That happens all the time, right? Like, you might say, okay, we're going to bring on a character for 3 episodes, and then it's like, we love this, let's continue.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that, that's always up in the air with as being a showrunner?
Yeah, it's always. And that's like an example with, you know, Anna. When Samira came on the show, it was like, that could have been a one-off that we just never saw Anna again. But, like, that was really a fun pairing of those two. And, like, seeing how Seth's affection for Anna and Anna's, like, willingness to be in a relationship with Seth could actually, like, dig at Summer and, like, get her to become active. Versus, like, maybe if there was no Anna, she would have been happy to get through high school just having this guy be in love with her.
Yeah.
but not really have to, like, be vulnerable or, like, go there.
Sure.
So that was something that was short and that, you know, that we extended and made longer. There's other times where you might bring on a character and it's not really working. Like, I will say, sending Marissa to public school. I think when we were in that story, we were like, this feels like not the show. Like, it feels like we've pulled the center of the show somewhere that it shouldn't be. Instead of pulling those kids into our world, we put Marissa in their world, mm-hmm. which might have been fun for an episode or two, but let's bring her back. And then deciding of like, well, do we just dig into this world and like try and really tell like better, more complicated stories in this world? Or do we cut our losses and like get out of this world? And that's always a back and forth. And like, you only have so much real estate, which I think even in season, at the beginning of season two, when we're bringing in these characters, it's tricky to figure out like, it's almost like a new pilot, mm-hmm. but we don't have enough room to like give those four kids their own pilot yeah. because we're also like, we care about you guys and it's like your stories. So they have a smaller amount of real estate to play in. And when you're not fully telling those stories of like, well, who are they and what are their emotions and what are their families like and what do they want? And those stories just become a little trickier to make mm-hmm. successful.
Supporting characters always have that fit that
yeah.
role that it's like, it's, and even as an actor, I'm here to service the A storylines.
Right.
And the B storylines, it's, you know, that's. I can understand that that must be a very complicated matrix for you as a showrunner. And now today, do you look back to things that worked on the OC, things that worked on Gossip Girl and didn't, and use them in your new shows?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely try and learn from your experiences. And again, even I think in season two of the OC, we were like, what if we had kept Seth and Anna, or what if we kept Luke and Anna around? What mm-hmm. if we paired them together? Like,
right.
there were some things we could have tried that we didn't try. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. No one's ever going to probably love any other character as much as they love the characters from the beginning of the first season. You know, that's,
yeah.
that feels like home for the audience. And feeling like, well, that character has no more stories, so let's send them away. I think we learned that lesson hard and we yeah. didn't do that anymore.
Right. A few times.
We're like, if this character's not working or we don't have any stories for this character, we just have to think up more stories. Like, it's literally like, our job to like, come let's up not, with some stories.
Yes, yeah, let's not kill them. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. But I think that's interesting and it's always kind of come up. Like, what would have happened had Luke been around or,
yeah.
you know, all of it. And I think at the time, Anna and Summer, it was kind of like real figuring out like who's actually going to be better with Seth.
Yeah.
And like figure out which actor and character or whatever. And that's kind of how it came about. It wasn't like planned out by any means.
100%.
Yeah. Life imitated art.
Yeah.
Well,
a little bit.
Well, we don't need to go there.
Okay. But the second season, I've read that it really was, the first season was about Ryan and his past, and the second season was slow down, and it's going to be about his future.
Yeah. Which you get a little bit in the school story in this episode.
Yeah.
And also, I think mm-hmm. Lindsay, we wanted to introduce a character that would bring to the forefront for Ryan the fact that because you kind of hear in the pilot that he's academically gifted, mm-hmm. like Sandy's talking about his test scores. And then we don't do much with that season one, which is fine. We didn't do like a ton of like academic school stories, but wanting to make sure that that stayed a part of his character. And that was a kind of a big reason why Sandy invested in him in the first place is because mm-hmm. he felt like this kid was special and he had a future and he would really benefit from being, you know, in this community and going to this school and this could be a real turning point for him. So pairing him with Lindsay, who was in a similar boat of like, this school is going to open doors for me and I need to be serious about my education. And them kind of bonding about that and, mm-hmm. you know, doing their like homework together on the weekends was a nice way to kind of open up his character in that way. And also have a teacher principal be interested in him And this is the moment when it's revealed that Ryan is going to be an architect.
Yes.
Because he knows about the I-beam that's holding back the, right. the Cohen right. construction.
I was impressed.
Well, and like we said in our last podcast, it's refreshing to see him not have to be a hero to save Marissa, to deal yeah. with his mom, to deal with his family, Teresa. Now we actually get to see this other layer added to his personality and who he is yeah. at his core. And there's something really, really satisfying about seeing him get to do something other than.
Yeah. And I've really enjoyed in these first four episodes, Ryan, seeing him at his construction job and his like Carhartts and his like work boots and just kind of like being comfortable in that world. Like it's not his dream, but like.
He looked good.
He looked look good.
Let
he
me tell you, I said
happy.
It yeah. when we were talking about the episode. I was like, this is the first time I'm like watching it. And I'm like, I find myself very attracted to Ben.
We're finding
maybe
that.
It was like the longer hair.
Yeah, the scruffy, yeah. unkept. Yeah, I was like, mm-hmm.
That's
working for you.
That's been a recurring comment for all of the men. Like Tate, we have a new costume designer, Carla Stevens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was, but this season, all the men are just looking a lot.
Just a little scruff goes a long
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tate Scruffy yeah. was like, yep.
Jimmy's amazing. He's just like, he's making all this money in the markets. Yeah. He's living on a boat.
I know.
He's like growing a
he's
beard.
He's living the life, man. He's just like.
He's walking around in his bare feet. Yeah. I don't think he wears shoes in like any of the first four episodes.
Why would he?
Yeah.
No. We've got some, I don't even know if you remember what's coming up, but we won't talk about
it. No, I don't.
But there's some great Julie, Jimmy stuff coming up.
Well, yes. In this episode, there's a scene, and we're going to get to it,
yeah.
that I really like. I'm going to read the synopsis of this
okay,
episode,
you do
so
that.
We can. So Seth is on a quest for selflessness to win Summer's friendship. He gets a job working for Alex at the music venue, The Bait Shop, so that he could get tickets for the Walkman to give to Summer and Zach. New student Lindsay and Ryan start off on the wrong foot, and when they're assigned as lab partners, they're both convinced they can't work together. Caleb assigns Julie as the new CEO of the Newport Group, shocking Kirsten and Sandy and myself, yeah. I have to say. I was utterly shocked. It was directed by Lev L. Spiro.
He had that wonderful goatee, you remember?
I do remember that.
Melissa Rosenberg's husband, our writer.
Are friend. They?
No, really?
So we've been trying to get, okay.
Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah.
Spiro? Yeah. And know. It was written by you, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Yay.
And the original air date was November 18th. 2004. Wait, isn't that today?
That's today.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. We're going to be
years
on it.
Later? Holy
yes.
crap.
You know what? Every time we record on a Thursday now, it's going to be the same. How interesting.
Mm. November 18th.
Let's get into probably one of my favorite scenes of this episode. And you must have had a blast writing this opening scene. And the opening, Seth self-absorbed, selfish scene, monologue. It's all about Seth scenes. They're so satisfying and so frustrating. But he's
Seth.
We open in the pool house and on the table by AC Newman plays. And Newport's Man of the Year is behind bars. Caleb is all over the front page, but Seth is just harping about his haircut and the haircut he got in Portland.
Oh, Seth.
Yeah.
Really, really, the self-involvement on that one. It's pretty epic, especially in this episode. And it was so funny how you wrote it, Steph, when and at the end he's like, well, I don't want Summer back, unless that's what she wants. You know? He does that whole spin on it. I thought yeah. that was so funny.
But when he says self, oh yeah, look, I'm just going on about myself. And he goes, oh my gosh, I really am. I'm a monster. And just let's talk about the next best thing. And he talks about his protractor. And he was like, no, you're not focusing. And it's just, there's so many layers. We were talking about this in the last episode too. These are complicated scenes. And there's, and Adam is, or Ben is right there with Adam. Mm-hmm. And they have such a great rapport. And there's the timing is there. And it's so, I don't know, it's so funny to see that his selfishness is at an all-time high.
Yes.
And
talking about him in first person.
Yeah, I think the idea of just having those guys back in the pool house and just that feeling of like, see, this is why we had to rebuild the show. This is why like everyone had to come home because like mm-hmm. we need this. They need each other. Like the audience needs this. Kirsten needs this. Like, that idea that like, oh, we're so comfortable, like back in our world and like telling those stories and like hearing those voices and like having those character deconstructions. And I also too, you know, after 27 episodes, now we really know the characters. The audience right. knows the characters. We can like riff on that. And it's not, it's less about like I'm getting new information and more about like, oh, I'm absorbing that information or commenting on that information and kind of using that for story instead of, it's less about revealing who these people are, more about like reflecting, you know, who they are because we know them now.
Right.
I think the show's at its best when you keep, when it is focused on that Cohen core. That's how I thought about the very first episode of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It just was super satisfactory. Of course, that they came back and all that.
I wanted to know if the last line in that first scene, when Adam says, how is Seth's hair right now? Like, I feel like that was added in an ad lib. Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I should look up the scripts before I come on this show.
That's what we really need copies of the scripts.
Yeah.
I feel like Josh was like, yeah, didn't I send them to you? I was like, no.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can answer that without knowing.
But he's always had a hair obsession. And I think Adam has admitted himself that he has a hair thing.
Really?
I thought so.
I'm
I think
sure
he said
true.
That on Dax Shepard or something like that. So, you know, we jumped to this next scene and I couldn't help. I rewatched it last night again and it's the funniest little thing. There's an establishing shot of the coastline and it looks like Laguna Beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's in reverse. And I was like, the ocean, the waves,
oh, the waves
it's really quick. They're going
like,
backwards.
Is there like a bird flying backwards?
Yeah. And the cars are going the opposite way. And I looked at it. It was so quick. Nobody would notice. But I was like, hey, it's a reverse. Just a little something or other. But Sandy has just picked up Caleb from jail. And it's so funny. Caleb says it's the worst night of his entire life. And my first thought was, did Sandy actually let him stay?
Right.
Just to punish him? Just to punish him.
I could see him doing that.
Yeah. But then I was like, well, why wouldn't Sandy's firm take on Caleb? Is it, and he said, because he's guilty. They're, you know, you're not popular. You're actually guilty. So I thought it was curious that, you know, he could make a lot of money from it, but I was curious why he might not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe because they like went against him in the like
in
Balboa
the land.
Heights,
right?
Land
it's a
situation.
Conflict.
Yeah, conflict of interest, or you know that they haven't traditionally represented the kid. Yeah, it's a conflict of interest for Sandy, or
yeah.
But of course, he ends up representing him anyways.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So then we're at Harbor, and this is where we meet Lindsay. Played by Shannon. Is it Lucio or Lucio? Because Patrick said Lucio.
I've always heard Lucio, but
oh,
I think
Patrick
Lucio is probably right, given
Italian?
Like it's Italian.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry,
well,
Shannon.
Let's say Lucio.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Lucio.
But this is where we meet her in her really beat up car.
I said Transpo did a good job with this car.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's no doubt you kind of get a lot of the character from the car. And Seth and Ryan, they're getting coffee. Seth's on his quest to be selfless. And they see a flyer for the Walkman playing at the bait shop.
The bait shop. What's
so,
the bait shop?
What is the bait shop? So we're finally introduced to the bait shop in this episode, which is super fun. And the Walkman.
Yeah. And so that was something that obviously music was a huge important part of the show in season one. And then I don't remember who actually, if it was like Alex Patsavas's idea to do the bait shop or how it like came to be. Or if we'd always had kind of hanging over our head the specter of the Peach Pit in 90210.
Peach Pit after dark.
Yeah, like
that was Nat was the owner.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like what did the kids never really had a hang spot. We kind of had that diner set, but it was hard because then you were just like
in a booth.
So was there some other place where they could go where, you know, we could tell more stories? And so we were pretty against that, but then when we started to realize, well, maybe if we could have actual bands on the show, like the Rooney episode, which we threw together at the very last minute. Originally, that was supposed to be an episode about them going camping.
Really?
Really?
Oh, man,
my gosh.
I would have loved to have seen that. Imagine Seth camping. That's pretty good.
Oh my gosh. If we could get all of the alternative storylines. Yeah. If you remember any, just shout them out.
That should be the reboot. Like all the alt versions of every scene.
So it was just like, it was too early in the show to take them completely out of their world and like put them in the wilderness. And like, we just never had any clue like where we were going to shoot this or like, we were like, and it was taking up too much real estate. Like, we really just needed one event for them to go for a night. And so that was just like at the last minute, like, let's just send them to a concert. Who can we get at the last minute? We got Rooney. They were super great. We loved like how that felt, like you guys being at a music show and seeing you in that world and doing live music, and like Rooney's album sales shot up 300%. And we were like, oh, this is maybe like something we could actually do on a regular basis.
Oh, cool.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
And then, in thinking about who we could have on, the Walkmen were one of our favorite bands. They had their second album had just come out and, was getting a lot of excitement around it. And then I pre-cleared the story with Josh because I was like, is it okay if I talk about this? Because it does not speak well of us. But the sort of hit off of that album was a song called The Rat, which when we had them on the show, we're premiering our new music venue, the Bait Shop. And we're like, no, The Rat is too popular. Don't play The Rat. Like, The Rat is played out. And so we play like the second and the third singles on the show. And Lev was like, so I listened to the whole album and there's this really good song on it called The Rat. And we were like, no, we can't do The Rat. It's too popular. And of course, it wasn't popular at all. It was like popular on like Josh's iPod, like we were listening to The Rat, but it wasn't like a radio hit.
Oh, wow.
And that was a real example, which we point to very often in our current lives, of like, just do The Rat. Like, don't overthink it. Don't just be like,
oh, wow,
it's too popular.
That happened with Phantom Planet. Josh thought that the Phantom Planet was outplayed
too.
Yeah,
exactly.
But Fox loved it,
right?
Yeah,
we didn't want, it was in the Orange County. Yeah. Movie.
It was in the credits at the very, very, very end if you watch the whole credits. That's the only time.
Oh, really? But for us, it was just like, it's on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. It's literally called Orange County. Like, this isn't very...
Right.
Original.
Original. And then originally in the pilot, we had an Interpol song playing. And they thought that was too, like, dark and moody. And so we replaced it with Phantom Planet with the idea that, well, we'll replace this before it airs. And they just loved it.
Right.
And how funny. That. And then, the rest is history.
The rest is history.
I also noted that, there's a coffee cart
at school.
High school.
Is it a cart or it's a bar?
Or a bar. It's a cart. Yeah. Or whatever. I don't, it's very odd. Like, there's a lot of coffee drinking, these high schoolers, and they're always ordering coffees and stuff. And I was wondering.
We wondered at the time.
but is Harbor School is that elitist that it would have the fancy schmancy?
Elitist enough that it had like a coffee bar that where you could get coffee.
A barista.
But also like not focused on like nutrition and children and like maybe don't give high schoolers caffeine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just a little.
I mean, but it's so funny. In high schools across the country, I'm sure they have Coca-Cola machines. I mean, just as,
right.
Yeah, but coffee seems very,
just a little different. And also we hear, you know, Seth has the idea to buy tickets to this bait shop, the Walkman, for Summer and Seth because he's manipulating.
Oh, yeah, and of course, Ryan instantly says it's not to get Summer back. Oh, no.
No.
He thinks he's so sly.
Yeah.
So manipulative. But every single person says, is this a trick?
Yeah.
The only person who wants to believe is Summer.
Summer.
Yeah.
And then this is also where Ryan actually meets Lindsay because
he bangs into her.
He really, like, first the coffee spills.
Yeah.
He clocks her hard.
No, it made me laugh watching it. I was just like, that is a body slam.
Like, I was surprised her nose wasn't actually
broken.
Yeah. Or broken. Yeah.
It was directed well. It was choreographed well. Yeah. It came off.
It was acted well. Like,
acted well.
She was great. And the tampons. Yeah. I love the tampon references.
I had a question for you as I was watching and I didn't dive deep enough. It just reminded me of some kind of old Hollywood, it's like slapstick something, My Girl Friday, or some kind of chemistry or energy that they had between them. Was there any reference to anything old Hollywood?
I don't know if it was anything specific, but I definitely love that, you know, that kind of a dynamic of two people who are like very equal and like immediately are able to like start sparring with each other. And Lindsay just kind of like she has a pretty negative attitude about
it. Oh, yeah.
She set herself up to be very defensive and making assumptions about everything.
Exactly. Right? And Ryan kind of, I think, does a good job of like, she's like, you know, jokes that she was assaulted by the the captain of the water polo team. And he's like, I don't play well, water polo, but also I was literally assaulted by the captain of the water polo team. And then I got to know him and he was pretty nice. And so you see a kind of like more mature Ryan and Lindsay actually eventually is able to like get over herself and be like, okay, well, maybe everybody here isn't my enemy.
Right. And it takes her a while though. Like, she's also her wardrobe, I thought they nailed it. Like exactly like the car and she steps out and the wardrobe.
Yeah.
Everything is
first outfit was like she's working at, I don't know.
Dockers?
Or something.
Yeah, no, kind of. It's like Dockers like, in a polo shirt or a button down.
Yeah.
Right.
That was good on wardrobe's part.
But no, she's. I mean, as from a writer's point of view, her dialogue was witty, quick. It was bitchy, but it was. But I could feel this, like you're writing to her intelligence, and
yeah. I also I truly hated high school.
Yeah, I was wondering how much you were in this.
That was for me a very easy character to write. The person who's like, I'm just here to get the grades, to get into college, and that's when life is going to be good. And I truly, I'm not here to like I'm just using everything I can in my body to just block out like everything and everyone who is here except for what I need to do to like. Make a better life.
Right. I mean, that's very like paralleled with Lindsay.
Really quickly, I mean, Sandy is telling Caleb, first of all, he keeps telling Caleb that he has to step down. How many times does he have to say,
you have to step down?
But then when Julie comes, I remember this was such a Julie outfit coming back from the montage and her CB wrap. And I remember personally going, like this outfit, but it when I saw it again, I was like, oh, I remember there were times when I was like, oh, it felt hard for some reason. Me personally, it was like, I would never wear this in real life. As an actor, sometimes the clothes bring out the character.
Sure.
And that outfit was so Julie.
Is it in this episode or it was one of the other episodes where you're wearing the like black bikini under
the Dior?
That
was
the
last
Dior bikini
episode.
And like with the sheer cover up and the incredible sunglasses. That's one of my favorite.
It's pretty
Julie Cooper outfits.
Oh yeah,
that Dior. Yeah. I still have it, but you could wear it and it would suntan a Dior on your.
That's amazing.
But this is like the beginning. Just to mention that she's like, okay, you know, I'm so sorry I wasn't there for you. And there's a but, you know, I hate when people apologize and there's a but. But she said, but you haven't been honest with me. And what can I do for you? And he just, says food, you can help me with food. And it's this grr thing. Yep. And so her wheels are turning at this point already. Yeah. Where she's like, okay, you know, she's acquiescing. But
oh, yes.
Anyway, just to mention that because it sets up for what's coming up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So back at school, Marissa is commenting on how perfect Zach is to Summer. And we learn that he's a congressman's son.
Yes.
Naturally. And that, you know,
Newport's
her dad is
JFK Jr.
Right. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think you actually referenced Prince William.
Oh, yeah. Prince William. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Maybe in a different episode, he's JFK.
Well, they both work. Yeah. I feel like, yes, it's interchangeable.
But Marissa has a point. Like, she's congressman, you know, he would be great at lunch with your dad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as an audience, we're all like, huh, yeah, this is, you know. But this is also where Summer's kind of, she's got, it's her heart and her mind are arguing. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, he is perfect.
Like on paper, this is the perfect specimen for my life, my whatever.
And why are we attracted to the guys that we know cause us grief because our...
How much time do we have?
Yeah, right?
Okay. But yeah, so... And then he admits that he reads the paper and then she's impressed. And
only like three papers.
only three, you know, which is funny because I commented that in real life, Brody had to read the paper every single morning with his coffee and his bagel.
Yeah, without exception.
Old man Brody.
You know what I noticed also? This is the second time that for some reason, Zach is wearing a polo shirt under collared, long sleeve collared shirt. Hmm. I thought that was kind of an interesting fashion choice. I was like, I don't remember that.
Really selling the preppy?
Yeah, I remember that from like my high school days, like an 80s.
A polo.
Where you'd layer. I truly think it was like an unabashed display of wealth where boys would like layer polo shirts on to just be like.
They're two colors.
Yeah, bitches.
Yes.
I have like five of these. You know?
They would wear a pink one and then a blue one on top. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Interesting.
Thank you. That's why you're here.
So then Ryan finds that he's in the same class as Lindsay and he accidentally slams his bag into her head. Once again, he's beating this girl up because there's no other seats left. So he has to sit next to her.
We haven't seen Ryan be so awkward and clunky and Ben played it nicely.
Yeah, so real.
I always have to ask, is the teacher... comes in and he says, I'm R.E. Greenberg. Is that a reference to anything?
That is my agent's name.
Okay.
And then the other people.
Jamie Barber was mentioned.
And Jen Anderson,
our first AD.
Who's going to come on the podcast, I think.
Oh, great. And then Adriana Alberghetti and Phil Raskin, who were also our agents.
Okay.
I always love all the shout outs.
Whenever there's any shout outs at school, I'm pretty sure. Because I literally looked up R.E. Greenberg and I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah, he's now like the partner, like runs WME.
I was going to say, you could probably find him. But then next, we actually are introduced to two huge things, the bait shop and Olivia Wilde playing Alex.
Yes.
So Olivia, I think you guys have talked about, we met originally because she read for Marissa.
She tested for her. Yeah.
And we loved Olivia, like just immediately when we met her, or like, who are you? Like, you're amazing. She did not feel like a Marissa. She was like, she was great, but she was just such a like strong, confident, kind of like still person that when she was acting like someone who was lost and broken and confused and alienated from her own family, it just felt like she could fix herself and she didn't need Ryan and it just wasn't the character.
Right.
And Misha was a much better fit for this girl whose story we were telling, but we never forgot about Olivia and we actually saw her fairly regularly. She was on another show on Fox in season one called Skin.
Yeah, we mentioned that with Patrick.
And then we would see her at music shows. I think we ran into her at Coachella that year. And so she just always felt like she was a part of our family. So when we started thinking of this character, we wrote it with her in mind and in the hope that we could get her to come and do it.
I feel like the character of Alex is... I mean, they're all great, but I think this one was my favorite addition to the show. She's, I mean, it's your she's a, she lives in the number streets. You know, we don't have that many kids in the OC yet that we're seeing that side of, you know, of Newport. And I love her style. And I wrote that, you know, she's only had a few credits at this point, but she totally comes off of a, as a veteran in this scene. It's, she's got, you know, there's,
She owns any scene, room. Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And this whole scene was so fun and had such great pacing. And one of my favorite lines is Seth going, I have a mop, Brian. Like, was that in this in the script? I don't know.
I don't remember.
I know. I have a mop, Brian.
Yeah. So he gets the job at the bait shop so he can get the tickets to give to Summer. And,
Which again is like a fun thing. It's fun to see Ryan be academic and focused on school. And it's fun to see Seth, who's been a little bit coddled as the son of the Coens, have to get a job. And like, even though he's getting it for this completely, we shall realize, selfish reason, self-serving reason, that he still has to mop the floor and like, like telling him about people who've like puked in the bathroom. And there's a sense of like, he's got to go and do that. And Seth Cohen has never, he's never had a mop before. Like he doesn't, this is new territory
just on his
for him. Yeah, exactly.
So I looked up, this building was an empty building when we went to shoot there. We just used the exterior. The interior was on stage.
Yeah, the interior was always on
stage. So it was an empty building. At one point, it was a nightclub at the top, and there was actually a tackle bait thing at the bottom. And it has since been torn down. It is gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a long time, it was there for a few years with the bait shop sign.
Yeah.
And it's now gone.
Where was it exactly? Did you say?
Redondo Beach.
Redondo,
But yeah, it was an odd building. But yes, it actually was a little dance nightclub at some point. So.
But that was great too, because that also just got us out on the pier a little bit more. Even if we're only like showing you guys entering and exiting, or it's like, it was a good excuse to force us to go down there and shoot. Right. A good like anchor to a storytelling anchor that got us down there.
So we go to another scene that's even, I don't know if you can top the selfishness of Seth, but they're in the, and Kirsten is so worried clearly about Caleb and the seriousness of his situation, and Seth is about to admit to his mom that, you know, I haven't really, with a look, a glare from Ryan, he's like, I haven't really been able to sleep. But she says, you know, but if grandpa does go away and there's no TiVo and, you know, and Kirsten says, oh, don't worry, Seth, it won't affect you. I don't know if that's a dig or she's saying, don't worry, honey, you'll be okay. I think it's as a mom. She's just saying.
Yeah, I think she's just trying to be a good mom
in
that moment.
Don't worry, it'll be fine. But then you can see that both Sandy and Kirsten are scared about losing
what's
the house
happening.
And the company
and
everything. So it is that serious.
Right. Now, I think that it's an interesting, the idea that this is a family-run company and that Kirsten's not going to necessarily, if the company goes down, Kirsten can't really separate herself from her dad. Like, that's her too. And what is the impact on their family? And like, will they keep their house? And
especially because Caleb hasn't been forthright with what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
He's saying, I haven't done this thing, but yet, you know, and anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to do spoilers.
Yeah.
For the next episode. But when I was talking to Josh this morning, I said, I really like how we, if we can pat our writers on the back, I really like how we broke this story because it's a great way of doing a kid story and an adult story where they're really connected. And I think it's genuinely, when the reveal happens, it's genuinely surprising.
I don't think people, I don't think people predicted this one.
Yeah.
I remember not predicting it myself. And I'm pretty good at predicting.
Wait, you mean what happens next episode is what you're saying?
No. Well,
what happens with the Caleb storyline?
When we understand why Caleb has not
doing
been
what he's doing.
Why he's doing what he's doing.
Rachel.
I can't wait for Rachel to
be
surprised.
Well, so now, no, that's it. So sometimes, and I'm so sorry, you guys. A lot of times, yes, I do assume that people. Sometimes we, like for the music, we had to talk about things on the show. So there are spoilers.
We say spoiler alert.
And well, I know also that the show has been available for streaming for 12 years.
I mean, just 12 years.
Yeah. All right. So I know there are a few people who are like, "Wait, I forgot. I wanted to be surprised." But spoilers everywhere, people.
I think I do know.
Okay.
So
physics
class. Lindsay and Ryan are our lab partners. She's like, she writes Ryan off from the beginning. And she's like, no, I did this. I turned it in. We're done. You can thank me for the A. Ryan's not having it.
He is very not. Presumptuous of her, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, very ballsy. Like, she's a ballsy chick. She's like, no, dude. Like, I'm here to get good grades. Fuck this. Like, and I like that Ryan's like, no. Although he goes to the teacher and like tells on her and they get more work for themselves. I don't really understand that motivation.
Yeah, I think like Ryan's proving a point to her that he's willing to be punished even if it's, you know, in order for like
just to make
justice
a point
to be
like,
achieved.
Yes, like, no. Or
he also suggests a different partner. I think he's trying to get out of working with her and he's like, actually, no, because I don't know if it's, well, and you know, oh, you're not stupid at all. I'm like, she's really, I mean, I knew girls like that. My sister was like that, you know, like girls who, to protect themselves, they operate with armor constantly just because they know somebody's, even if it's not warranted, they just are always protected.
Yeah.
Right. Then we're at the bait shop. This is really funny. The whole, Alex is trying to lift all these heavy glasses, glassware, and Seth's just going on. And then he's like, oh, what, you want me to help with that? And she's like, dude.
Adam's getting into the physical comedy.
Yeah. It's really funny how he carries it and everything. But so we learned that Alex is 17 here. She moved out of home. But I love her conversation with her mom. It's like that. But you can tell they're really close, though, you know? And I just thought that was played really well, written really well. I liked that. And we're learning more about Alex.
Yeah. And I know some people say 17, she manages. It's like, well, she's TV world. Yeah. That's not something to focus on, I guess.
Right.
But also, I mean, again, I finished high school when I was 16 and got an apartment with my friend and had to lie about my age to get a job working in a restaurant. And when I told my boss, the restaurant manager, who was this amazing woman, Linda, that I was leaving to go to college, she's just like, yeah, I know. Like, you're smart and you're obviously lying about your age. So. She knew, but she gave me the opportunity anyways. Cool. Yeah.
I lied to work at Carl's Jr.
That's very interesting, Mindy. You just were like, I really just love chicken stars.
Famous stars. I did. I was like 14 and you had to be 15 or so. I don't know.
Yeah, my perception was like, I'm 16 and I'm finished high school. Like, I'm amazing. Everyone is going to want to hire me. And literally nobody wanted to hire me to do anything. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because there were laws and because like, they just wanted like adults doing those jobs.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty
well,
cool.
Well, I don't know. I think in this world, Alex has the confidence of the owner, Nat.
Yes, exactly.
So no problem there.
No problem there.
So we do find out in Kirsten's office that Sandy comes and says that he quit/was fired. And I was curious, just from a writing standpoint, how does Sandy being fired, I know what we talked about why, but how him being fired enhances the storyline, like him not working at the firm?
I literally thought that when I was watching the episode. I was like, why did we feel like we needed to fire Sandy? Like, was it because we like needed did we use the like Partridge, Savage and Khan set for the bait shop or something?
There's some kind of technicality.
We were building the Newport set because you guys were all going to, is that a spoiler, work together? No, that happens in this episode.
Yeah, that happens,
You
guys were done.
That.
I mean, there's different reasons
like
why you guys.
He wasn't going to have any more stories with people in his office. And he was better as an independent attorney.
Yeah. I feel like Sandy has bounced around career-wise quite a bit already.
Yes.
From Public Defender to Savage and Khan.
Well, the Public Defender, job was a great job for the pilot.
Right.
Because it brought Ryan into right. their family.
Right.
It wasn't a super great job for series because, like, we didn't need to adopt any more Ryan.
You know, you what I can't mean? Get invested in that many people.
We don't need, like, a
he's not
Sandy's
a straight puppy,
case
Sandy.
Of the week of the other unfortunate people that he's helping.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed more interesting if it was Sandy dealing with Newport mm-hmm. people, like Noopsy type of people,
mm-hmm.
Where he's in more conflict with them versus like he's aligned with them and like trying to help them. And the part of it, Sandy's journey was like trying to figure out how to be a man, you know, the man of the house in a world where his wife made way more money than him and his father-in-law was like this huge businessman and it wasn't, was it really his house? Like, mm-hmm. so kind of trying to like give him the opportunity to prove himself in this world and have to overcome those obstacles versus doing something that he loved, that he was very comfortable doing, very good at doing, but didn't, from a character point of view, didn't give him that equality in his marriage, but also from a character point of view, didn't give us like more juicy stories where he was having to like interact with Newport people.
Right.
That points again to something that Adam talked about and we talked about, that Adam made the point of, he thought that the show was a celebration of affluence, but it's also a critique of it as well.
Yes. I listened to Adam's podcast. And I thought that was a really interesting point that he made. And obviously we've done it a couple times because right after this we did Gossip Girl. And I think Adam said something like, you know, it's trying to be a critique, but really it's a celebration. But I would push back on that a little bit and
Me
say
too,
I do think
bit.
It can be both. And I think there are lots of things that are both, you know.
Right.
Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette is definitely a critique of like the court of Versailles, but also there's a lot of amazing montages of like shoes and macarons that are fun and enjoyable. You go back to like the Age of Innocence and like Edith Wharton, and she's definitely critiquing like the limits of the women have limits put on their, you know, power and freedom. But also she's giving you an amazing description of the drapes and what everybody's wearing. And that's enjoyable.
Right.
And I do think you can do both those things. And I think, you know, what Josh and I talk about is just like wanting to make sure that everyone who watches the show, and I think of my young self for this, feels like they're invited to the show, that the show is for them and that their feelings and points of view are, they can find a way in, mm-hmm. that it's not a show that's like, this is not for you. This is only a show for affluent people. This
right.
is a show for everybody. And you can hopefully find your way in. And even in these episodes, I noticed some nice moments of that where Ryan is kind of the ambassador of like outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in the next episode after this one. But where, you know, he critiques Marissa for calling, referring to DJ as the yard guy,
mm-hmm.
and then offers him, gives Marissa his tie so that he can, like, come join the event as a guest and not just pick
right.
her up after.
Right.
And
that's
like,
at the snow scene.
Yeah, and it's a really nice, self-aware Ryan who's like, gets that this isn't easy for everybody and like...
Well, that conversation started because we were talking about what it would look like to do a reboot.
Yes.
And he was suggesting that, you know, why would we want to go back there in the political atmosphere or this or because Orange mm-hmm. County, to be quite honest, it has become more affluent since a show like this has mm-hmm. been on. And it's become, I mean, just... Hey, guess what? I grew up in Orange County. Sorry. It's kind of an ongoing thing. But I think there's ways, and it's an age-old part of storytelling in television of, you know, your dynasties, your Gossip
right.
Girls, your of that the class system is always
right.
great conflict and mm-hmm. makes for great storytelling.
Yeah. No, and I do agree. It would be hard. If you took those scripts today and were like, let's just retell this story, I don't think that
would work.
It would need some
finessing.
Yes, for sure. We go to Summer's bedroom. She's watching the valley, naturally, and Seth shows up. And the stepmom, who's in a good mood because of Klonopin, let him in. And he gives her the tickets for her and Zach. What's he up to?
Well, Summer instantly says, why?
What's going on? Yes, but I thought it was a cute scene. And then when he's like, no, I just want to be your friend. But then she's like, wait a minute. It just speaks to the whole, like, you always want what you can't have kind
of thing.
Exactly.
Did you hear what they were saying on the valley? The dialogue?
What?
It took me a couple tries. So I love April. She's the best girl. Well, I'm her mother, Sarah. And all of a sudden she says, and all of a sudden in the background you hear, she won't ever know about us. And then she goes, quick, get under the bed. Mom? April, hi, honey. I have something to tell you. I'm pregnant. I was like, all this little stuff. It took me like 5 tries to hear what it was going on.
I didn't hear any of that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway.
I did not hear that. Marissa's eating with Jimmy on the boat. It's cute. He makes French toast. But this is actually like, when you come, seeing this like sweet side with her and Jimmy was really nice. Mm-hmm. And you were like, well, I married you because I loved you. He's like, you know, you're like, you married me because I was pregnant.
Yeah, he's like, I married you, you know, because you're, he says, you married me because you were pregnant. And you say, no, I married you because I loved you.
Yeah.
You married me because I was pregnant. And
right.
He's like, burn.
Well, and it's interesting, like she's calmed down and she's been put in her place by Caleb. And he's like, how's it going? And Julie's like, I really can't believe this is happening again. And here's where it's interesting. Everybody underestimates Julie.
Yes.
But Jimmy's the only one who talks to her like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, touche, yes, you're right. You know, you married for money. And she's like, no, I didn't marry you for money. And he says, nobody puts Julie
in the corner.
In the corner.
I love the dirty dancing reference.
And then this, you know, back to the gulag, you know. So there's this thing of, you know, it's interesting. I always want to ask you, like, what's going on in your, you know, Haley's gone. And now it's like, let's, in the writer's room, do you remember going, let's have Jimmy and Julie start to be nicer to each other?
Well, I think, I mean, we always felt, and it's all like, Jimmy and Julie scenes are gold. And so, like, how do we get some of those in the show? Obviously, they're still co-parenting their kid. So they have, you know, reasons to talk to each other, but that feeling of like they're still best friends, like they, nobody knows you like the person who knew you when you were that age. They're the only people that kind of like know each other from, especially Julie, from before the time that they are the people that they are, and they've been through a lot together, and they can be because they've been through so much, they can just be super honest and just like call each other on their shit and like and appreciate what's good about the other person, but like know deeply what those flaws are and just have fun with each other. And I think starting to think about like, all right, like, you know, Julie got everything she wanted and then it kind of wasn't exactly what she thought it would be. And Jimmy is just like living on a boat. He's got bare feet. He's got a beard. He's single now. He learned how to make French toast. Like, it's going to be something going on there.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I forget if Tate talked to you guys about like, there was a couple years ago, like long after the show ended, Josh and I were talking to Tate about something else. And he was like, did I ever, I was a really bad dad on that show. And we were like, no, you weren't. You were amazing. Like, you were kind to Marissa and loving. And, like, you wouldn't let Luke come in and talk to her when she was mad. And you made sure she ate a banana when she didn't want breakfast. You were a great dad. And he's like, no, I wasn't. I was a terrible dad. I thought I was a good dad. And then, like, my sister kind of told me that I wasn't a good dad. And then, like, now that I, you know, am a dad, like, I recognize that I was really a terrible dad.
Aww.
And Josh and I were like, oh, yeah, there might be some truth to that, actually, as we think about, like, Josh, you know, at that point, was now a dad. Yeah. He's like, yeah, you make some you good know what? Points. Yeah. Not the world's greatest dad. That's it was really our funny. Concept at the time of like what a good
no,
dad
you gave
would
her
be.
A banana. Yeah. Dad well, of the year.
But actually, what's interesting is you did it in a very realistic way. A lot of parents are not good parents. They're doing the best they can right. in that moment, and they don't realize just how selfish they're being.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the way he told Marissa when she was in Tijuana about moving out, just there are all these little, and I think it was like Entertainment Weekly that voted Julie and Jimmy the worst parents in television. And he was saying that his sisters used to give him a lot yeah. of shit about it. Because he was like, did you get shit about it? And I'm like, no, not that much. I don't think I did. I don't know.
That's funny.
But we'll be talking to him again soon, so.
We'll bring that up.
Yeah.
So this scene when we're back in Summer's bedroom and she tells Zach that she got these tickets from Cohen for the thing and he's skeptical, you know, and he's like, if he changed, would you want to be with him? Whatever. So he's being so mature, right? So I'm watching this scene and all of a sudden it dawns on me and I have this epiphany and I'm like, Zach is the Aiden. He's the Aiden. He is, okay, so the Sex and the City reference. Uh-huh. He is like that perfect guy, supportive, mature, like all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, is Seth Mr. Big? Because like—
He kind of was.
Like obviously, no, not right. any, but then yes, like he is that. And it also speaks to what you were saying before, like how you start with the relationships right. and the characters and whatever. And you always want that, you know, mm-hmm. like the Carrie and the Big and Seth and yeah. Summer or Ryan Merce or whatever.
Yeah.
But it really like for the first time I'm watching this, I'm like, holy fuck, that's Aiden. Did that ever occur to you at all?
I don't recall that, but it makes a lot of sense. And obviously that was a really important character at the time.
Yeah, right. But I had
so
never...
that would have been in our consciousness or our subconsciousness.
Right, yeah.
But, timing-wise. But you guys wrote a character that was literally perfect and even likes comic books.
Yeah.
So he's everything.
Seth can't even hate him.
Yeah, right. So he has to, so then they have to, you know, which ultimately leads to the comic book storyline. But that, but we can't help who we fall in love with.
Yep.
No, you sure can't.
But she's sure going to try.
Right? I'm going to try everything in my power.
Especially because dad likes him.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So that leads us into everyone celebrating. Popping some champagne and Sandy is because Sandy's getting fired or quit or whatever. But, but you know, I love this line from Caleb. Oh, yeah, no, too much champagne makes me giggly. He's like, wait, I don't want to. I'm like, where was that coming from? You just wanted to hear Alan Dale say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was so fun to write for and like
booty call giggly.
Booty call and like frittata. Sandy, are you a frittata man? Yeah, you'd give him little things like that and he'd really just be magic with them.
But here's the biggest shock of entire episode.
My mouth dropped
when Julie's kind of urging him to make the announcement that Julie is now.
But you know, he announces it that he's stepping down mm-hmm. as CEO, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, Kirsten's gonna step in.
Oh, yeah. She's like, Dad, well.
Yeah, Dad. She's all happy. And then you see Julie behind him, like nudging.
She goes, ahem. Ahem. With big red lips.
Oh, yeah.
She's got that vibrato that Jimmy just said, gave her that pep talk, basically.
Yeah. And it announces that. You are now the CEO of the Newport Group.
Who wants more champagne?
I mean, it's so classic. Like,
oh my gosh. And then the actual like push in with the camera onto their faces. Like literally, it's the worst possible thing. And it really is.
Yeah.
It really is the worst possible thing that could possibly happen for them. But Julie's just like, yeah, let's have fun.
That's a really fun moment for you.
There we go. Yeah.
Okay, so we're at the bait shop and the Walkman are playing.
The premiere of the bait
Not
shop.
Not the rat, but they're playing. Yeah.
Little House of Savages, a very good song.
Yes. And Seth is waiting anxiously for Summer to show up. Now, not only does Summer show up, her bangs show up.
So,
since that day, Josh has always said, Bilson, no bangs. Like, it was very traumatic. It was Let me tell you what happened. The Bangs were not there in the previous scene.
Right.
Which is the same night they miraculously appear.
Right.
We're in the hair and makeup trailer. Head of the hair department, who didn't normally do me, you know, was like, want to try bangs? I was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. She clips in these like horrendous bangs that look like a dead rat. Hey, let's stay in theme. Just like plopped on the top of my head. And it was literally like a minute before I was needed on set. And she just clipped them in and we went with it. One of the poorest decisions possibly ever made in my career. But it's hilarious because it's always been a joke. Josh.
No, for whatever reason, I don't remember if I was on set that night or like someone sent me a photo and I okayed the bangs. The bangs were not my idea, but somehow like he hangs the bangs on me.
Oh, really?
That I let the bangs happen.
So can I might offer that it's possible that night at the bait shop was the first time you wore that outfit. Meaning, you know how we shoot out of order?
Yeah, shoot out of order.
Right, yeah, that it wasn't.
So you did that, and it was like, I don't care if it doesn't match. You're not wearing this for the whole episode. So it probably got, even though we...
No, because then she has them on in the exterior, which would have been a different location.
No, the idea was that there just are clip-on bangs that girls clip on.
But it's confusing to the audience.
It's confusing because it seems like summer.
The bangs themselves
have
bangs. Were confusing.
Yeah.
And then that like, bad.
I didn't know that he like hangs the responsibility on you. Makes me feel a little better. Because, yes, I think I cut bangs right before Heart of Dixie pilot and Josh had a heart attack.
Oh, yeah. Brought back. The other thing the PTSD. That is a trigger for Josh. So there's the bangs. And then it's like maybe in the next episode or the previous episode. Marissa wears a beret that has a bow on the back of it. And then she has like a really intense conversation with DJ. And he's just like, the bow and the hat? Like, really? We had to go with the... And I don't know that anyone had even seen the back of the hat. Like, in wardrobe pictures, I think we'd only seen the front of the hat.
Uh-huh.
And like, hats were a thing. Like,
yes,
girls wore it.
Pearls.
Hats.
Absolutely. Hats. It just reminds me of Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, totally. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But Josh doesn't like...
He gets like the funniest hang-up.
No, he does. He really focuses on small things and like the audience does not notice at all. But it's,
no.
But I do
notice
too.
The bangs.
I know he like in the pilot when Ryan is putting Marissa into bed in the pool house, the sheets are black.
I know that's your thing.
And
you
I
hated
was just
the
like,
black sheets.
Black sheets. This is supposed to be like her Sleeping Beauty moment. Like, why is this not? And as if Kirsten Cohen is going to put black sheets in her guest house. Give me a break. Like, who signed off on this? So I have my own thing. So I can't totally just make fun of him.
I remember, and I could be wrong, does Josh not like floor lamps?
I don't know.
I remember some. I persisted in my mind, and like he didn't like floor lamps.
Interesting.
And set decoration.
That's
okay.
Not a memory.
It's weird what we remember.
I wouldn't put it past him. But. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so the scene itself is that where this is the scene itself or that
not
no, that
yet.
Happens later. Sorry,
yeah,
they're
starting. Yeah, but okay. In the meantime, they're at the pier. On the pier, Ryan finds Marissa sitting alone. They're there for each for their team. Summer, team Seth.
Right.
But they start talking about Summer and Seth, and clearly they're talking about themselves.
Yep, and another Journey plug by Ben/Ryan that he likes Journey.
But they recover. For, you know, the last time we saw them, he was pretty angry at her at the carnival. And now they're like, so, do you want to go inside? I'm not mad, you know.
They're making nice.
They're trying. Yep. Yeah, so that's that.
We like that. And then, do you want to talk about that?
No, I think we're good. Okay, I mean, so, Sandy's mad at Caleb and he's like, you better fix this or Julie's going to be your lawyer.
Right. Then at the bait shop, we find Seth and Summer at their VIP table.
Yep.
You know, they're hanging out. I like how Alex comes up. This is where she says, you know, someone puked. You got to go clean it.
Right.
And my favorite is Summer's line. Like, why is that tattooed girl talking to you about puke? Which was
because
pretty good.
It's inconceivable to her that Seth has like gone and gotten a job.
Well, yeah. That's like, it's crazy. But there's like, you know, nice moment between them and they're having a nice conversation. And of course, what does Seth do? He kisses Summer.
Yes.
Oh, Seth.
Seth.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, the Walkman song, what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah.
For the scene.
Yeah.
Because that's all Seth's doing. I mean, and she's like, I believed you. I really right. believed you.
Yeah.
And so he finally admits, he says it, you know, like, I can't be friends. Then we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really like the whole kind of Seth and Summer, all of their stuff. And it's really just, I like the writing for Seth and Summer. And it's mm-hmm. starting to show more and more, and especially in this episode. I was a fan.
Great.
Yep.
I like, too, to just, there's this sense of Zach kind of just clocking you guys. It feels like every time he turns his back, it's like the two of you are like chatting and laughing about something. And even if you have no one's like, you're not trying to go behind his back. You're not like trying to cause trouble. You're like committed to, you know, trying to date him. But like the pull is just too strong. And right. like, it's just, there's.
It's true in life. You know, yeah. you have those relationships where you can try other things, but there's something that always pulls you to yeah. a person.
It's, I mean, I guess in high school, this idea that can't we be friends? Can't we be friends? Can't we be friends? It's really hard to be friends. Adults don't do that.
Yeah.
I think it's like why right. they're so motivated. It's because they have to see each other every day.
Every day.
That
yeah.
has to be
yeah.
it. Because
and then when you're in a friend group with people.
Yes.
Or same on a television group. Show. You've got to be able to figure that out. I think right. it'd be really, really hard.
Really hard. Yeah. But as adults, like how many exes are you friends? I don't know.
Yeah.
But you don't need to be because you're not going to, yeah, be like unless sitting in class kid, with them or like, the, yeah.
That's equivalent to high school.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So Seth talking about his mistakes. Ryan is off to meet Lindsay to do their homework. This isn't where Marissa goes, right?
No, but I was like, you know, poor Seth. He's just like, I'm so exhausted. And he's just, maybe I'll play. He starts, of course, his brain starts going, how can I do it this way, that way? Maybe I'll play her right. hot and cold, which mm-hmm. is, a, you know, a throwback to the summer line, hot and cold. But then he says, I'm back. Cohen classic, red, white, and me. What does that mean?
I don't know.
I like it though.
I know. I was like, okay, it's, red, it's like red, white, and blue, the classic flag. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or,
right.
I don't, it's just
it's
like.
It's like the, what goes together, red, white, yeah. and blue.
Red, white, and me.
It's all about
right?
That.
Okay.
That's how I take it. Oh, right. So, okay. So Marissa's in her bed at her house with Share Bear.
Yeah.
And Seth shows up. And again, I like seeing these scenes with the people you don't always expect. And Seth goes to Marissa, like, you know.
He's like, when I have a problem, I just need to talk incessantly. And I think I don't have anybody else. And she goes, I'm game.
It's cute. It's a really cute scene with them.
At least he's aware. Like, I just need to talk to somebody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right, right, right. And so they're talking about it. And she's like, maybe you just need to apologize. And then he's like, well, where is she? You know, at the club with her dad. Maybe not now. He's like, no, I got it.
No
whatever.
Problem.
And he also says to her, or wait, what does he say to
no,
her?
No, yeah, he's at school. He's a dork. He's
about
know,
Ryan.
Working, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so she's gonna go see
right.
Ryan because
yeah,
we had fun
Ryan
last night. I'd like to see him. Right. Yeah, he's a dork.
I feel like that may have been an ad lib.
Very possible.
Very possible.
Although I don't know.
But then when we finally get to school and finally Miss Lindsay apologizes, and it's very hard for her to offer this, you know. Mm-hmm.
Of course, at the moment, you know, they start getting along is when Marissa sees it.
Exactly.
Because how could it be any other way?
How could it?
Yeah. But they are. They're getting along, and they're cute.
They're cute. And then I think that idea that Marissa sees with, and not just they're getting along, and as Ryan moved on, but like, they are a nice fit for each other. Like, she has no interest in physics homework, you know.
Right.
She doesn't have this kind of banter with Ryan. When they were together, most of their conversations were about, like, her
drama.
Problems.
You're right. Like, they couldn't just be kids.
Yeah.
Ever.
It goes to, your life can be about the people that surround you.
Yeah.
So he's finding, it's refreshing.
Yeah.
And you can, so he's like, I'm around somebody who doesn't have this, you know, she's not drinking vodka every day.
Right.
She's not,
you
know, having, I'm sorry,
she's
the
an
problems
outsider.
With Julie. Yeah.
She's moved to Harbor.
She's focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like this pairing. Okay. So Marissa clocks it. We see that. And then this is where I actually love that this is where Rachel Yamagata
It's great. Gone starts great to placement. Play. Yeah.
Worn Me Down. Sorry. Worn Me Down starts to play. I love that song. I still to this day. Too.
It's one of my favorite music moments of the show.
It's so good. And it starts to play as she walks off in slow mo. Maybe it's in slow motion.
Maybe a little slow.
And then it cuts to Seth going to the club to try to find Summer. You know, and he goes and they say, oh, it's a table for three. And obviously he sees her, Zach, and her dad getting along
so well. Just everyone laughing.
Laughing. Yes. And I take his hand.
And so does your dad.
Yeah, he's like, his arm.
I mean, he wants to date him at this point, my dad. And, you know, the song's still playing. And it hits so hard because of the music. It's particularly in this moment.
Seth's all dressed up too.
Yeah, I put on a tie. Really,
I mean, I feel kind of sad for him, but also like, dude.
Yeah,
it's a pretty ballsy move. Still, like, Seth has courage.
He does.
He shows up. He's like, I'm gonna go say I'm sorry.
Yeah,
in front of her dad.
Ooh,
That's but as we know, he can just go on and on in front of the dad. Just ramble on.
But it was, you know, it's so, you know, Marissa, she's happy, sad, you know, she's so lost. She's like a balloon in the windstorm, you know, she's solid and then she's all over. And that's the end of this episode where Seth and Marissa are both sitting totally dejected. And who knew that we would be the two loneliest people in Newport?
Well, he's like,
me, obviously, but
Right as he said it, I was like, well, what's he talking about? Like, him, sure. Yeah. Like, not her. And then he said it.
Correct.
Yeah, so he's actually, I'm surprised, well, maybe there's no, he's come back from Newport, and it's an interesting thing that we talked about, that in the first episode, where you could have the same life and almost, you can reinvent yourself in a different city, but ultimately your happiness comes from yourself. It's when we assign blame to our surroundings, you're going to be unhappy anywhere.
Right.
And now here he is back though. And he must, I don't know if he's learning that lesson. He's back in Newport with Ryan, and yet he's still not content.
Yeah.
Right.
And that also, like, Ryan can't, when he leaves and he's in Portland and he's like, I'm not coming back, because without Ryan, Newport is like miserable. You know, I wanted to go to boarding school. I hate it there and I'm just not coming back. That even with Ryan, there's fun pool house stuff. There's, you know, he's got a brother. It's better. But at the end of the day, like, Ryan has his own life. Ryan is focused on Ryan goals, and Seth still has to like be Seth. So he's got some things to figure out. It can't just be like, well, Ryan's back, so everything's fine now. It's like,
right.
You know, that brings me, I had one more question that Adam said during the podcast. He said he didn't remember Seth being particularly heroic. Do you agree with that?
I would disagree with that. I think we really tried to find moments for him where he did. I mean, the coffee cart moment is a real hero moment in season one. This moment, I think I wrote quite a few heroic Seth moments.
It's interesting how actors can remember their characters and what they,
I mean, he's like heroic in like a John Cusack-y say anything way, not necessarily in like a
Ryan
punching way. But.
Yeah.
Right.
Could you imagine?
Well, showing up at the yacht club, I mean.
Ballsy.
Yeah. But we know like how afraid he is of Dr. Roberts and yacht clubs are like not his jam, and Summer's mad at him and like dating someone else. And he's prepared to take all that on and like do what he needs to do.
It's such a, but as frustrating as he can be, it's still very relatable that we've, to me, Seth says everything that we all think as teenagers.
Yeah.
That it just comes out in this stream of like, you know, diarrhea of the mouth. But at the same time, it's great to see characters that are so layered, and because life is about failure and learning from mistakes. Yeah. And his character is so rich that it's, you know, really, really helped define this show.
Yeah.
Thanks to your writing.
Yeah.
I think we have, that's the end of that episode, but I think we have some voicemails.
Ooh.
Do we?
Hi, my name's Diana, a huge fan of the OC and the podcast. Thank you so much for doing it, Melinda and Rachel. It's truly best, one of the best parts of my week. My question is for Stephanie. I wanted to know, with the character of Lindsay, when you brought her on from the get-go, you know, did you know that she was going to be Caleb's illegitimate daughter? I thought that was all going to pan out, or was it more about getting, you know, a different love interest for Ryan and getting like another girl to sort of shake things up? Yeah, that's my question. Thanks for the podcast again. Excited to listen to the episode.
Yes, we did know. And again, I patted the writers on the back of, I think this is a really well-crafted story that we bring Lindsay in and she seems like a new love interest for Ryan. It's bringing out another side of him. Marissa kind of feels like in that area, she can't really compete. Like, it feels like it could be something. Got this Caleb story where he's been paying off this woman. And then Sandy finds out that, like, he thinks it's an affair. Mm-hmm. And but Caleb doesn't want anyone to know, because it was while Kirsten's mother was still alive, and that would be very painful for her. So he's willing to actually, like, go to jail to, like, keep this secret so that Kirsten never finds out that he cheated on her mom.
And has a half-sister.
And then we find out that Lindsay is the love child.
Which
it's
makes
Seth's aunt.
Yeah. And yeah. So it becomes even more incestuous, which is, you know, the Cooper Nickel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Family is now like truly Seth's aunt. Ryan is dating Seth's aunt.
Yeah. I did know that for the record. Good.
Yeah.
I was reminded earlier, but
I think, again, in trying to bring all these new characters onto the show, we tried to do it in a way where it wasn't just like, and now there's four new characters, so that, like, we introduced that, you know, Marissa had a Hawkeye, like, being their gardener for the summer, and then it was a reveal that they had actually been hooking up.
Right.
We had I think in the second episode, Summer is already talking about this Zach guy that she's been hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet him through comic books, and it's like, oh, maybe he's in the comic club with Seth, and it's like, oh, maybe they'll be friends. Oh, no, that's the guy that mm-hmm. Summer's dating. So finding interesting ways over the course of this first little quartet of episodes to introduce these new characters in ways that were surprising to the audience and didn't just feel like just a whole bunch of new characters kind of plopped into people's laps.
Yeah. Thank you for your question.
Hi, it's Charlie from the UK here. A massive fan since my early teenage years, and have recently just watched the show again in lockdown, and I'm really missing it now that it's finished, but so pleased to listen to it back through your podcast. I have a question for Stephanie. What is your favorite episode and why?
Well, I mean, I definitely love the pilot just because there's so much storytelling in that episode, and it was such a journey to get it made, and just all of the friendships and the relationships were forged in pulling that together. I really love the end of season one. I think that's an incredible episode. And I think that the show ended in a really great way. I was really, like, happy that we were able to bring the story to completion. And then there's just some random episodes that I think are really fun and crazy. One of the first things that Josh and I actually wrote together, where we were, like, co-writing, was the Summer Bummer episode in a future season when Summer comes home from Brown. And it's just, like, really, really crazy. Like, Caitlin's having a pool party. Chris Pratt shows up. Like, it's very like the new tone of the show, where we were like, let's just have fun and go bananas.
But you guys knew the show was over, so you just
these are our episodes. Like, we can tell whatever stories we want. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and that was part of us like being like, oh, we should just like write lots of things together because this is really fun.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. We appreciate you taking
Thank
the time
you guys.
And talking to us.
Yes.
As always.
Yes, the fans are so appreciative. So.
Yeah.
So thank you again. And we, well, follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like to watch us and see us in our new backyard, you can check us out on YouTube and HBO Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving up in the world.
Bye, bitches.
Bye.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed, heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment, bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible, signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh.
And I'm
Rabia Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of. Obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lamb, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.